We want to welcome you to the statewide conversation about COVID-19. It is an opportunity to ask questions about Minnesota's response and plans during this pandemic. If you didn't get a chance this week to call in your question or email, you can call 612-562-9895 or email covid@ampers.org. I'm Heidi Holton. I'm live from the KEXC studios on the Mississippi River in Grand Rapids, Minnesota. We are teaming up with community radio stations throughout the state. It's a partnership with Ampers Diverse Radio for Minnesota Communities and the Minnesota Broadcasters Association. Minnesota State Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan can't be with us today, but I am very happy to welcome back Chris Ayersman to our conversation. She's the director of the Minnesota Department of Health Infectious Disease Epidemiology Prevention and Control Division. Chris, thanks so much for taking time for us today.
Oh, happy to join you.
Well, so I want to start off today, if you don't mind, with a really big question. So many people are tired of this pandemic. You're probably one of them.
Yes, I am.
And they are ready to start their lives and get back to normal. Many have gotten back to normal. So I'm giving you the chance now to convince us why we should still care about physical distancing and wearing masks.
Well, I guess what I'll do is I'll refer you to the news that you're seeing about Texas and Arizona and some of the other states that are seeing whopping big increases in their cases. Because if we don't practice social distancing, if we aren't paying attention to the community mitigation strategies that we can use, wearing a mask in public, you know, keeping 6 feet away, all of those things, we will end up just like those other states. So I think while we have enjoyed and are celebrating the fact that we have had some stabilization of cases and stabilization of hospitalizations, the virus is still with us. So that is not something that's permanent. And if we aren't paying attention, we will end up like the other states that you're seeing in the news.
Okay. And along those same notes, we heard from a listener this week about the COVID outbreaks in southern Minnesota that were linked to going out to bars. They want to know how you find that out. And did all of the people in that bar get it? And should they assume that anyone could have the virus at any time?
Yes, I mean, I think that that's one thing that, I'll start with the question about how did we find out about people in the bars. So any time that a positive case, a person who's tested positive for COVID is identified, those cases are reported to the Department of Health. It's part of our communicable disease reporting rule. And so we have individuals who follow up with that person and do an interview and find out about, you know, how they're doing, where they've been, who they may have been exposed to, and who they may have exposed. And so in the course of those interviews, we identified a number of people who reported having spent time at various bars. And many of them reported spending time at the same bars. So I can't say that everyone who was at those bars was likely infected, but we do know that quite a few people who were at the bars have now tested positive. And to the question of should I just assume everyone is positive, yes. I mean, I think that's why we ask people to make sure that they're social distancing, because if you haven't heard, we now have learned that individuals in the 2 days or so before their symptoms develop can be infectious. So you can have people who don't have any symptoms, don't have any apparent symptoms, but may be infectious. And so that's why it's so important that we are attentive to maintaining social distance, you know, taking advantage, wearing masks. All of these things are done to protect ourselves and to protect other people.
You know, with seasonal allergies right now, are some people kind of mistaking some of that for COVID and maybe getting more testing?
Certainly, if you're someone who has seasonal allergies, that's something you always have to weigh as you're evaluating, you know, any symptoms that you're having. But we do know that there have been people who have kind of discounted the symptoms that they're having as part of seasonal seasonal allergies have not gotten tested and have, in fact, infected other people. So if you're having symptoms and you have concerns, you know, reach out to your healthcare provider to help with, you know, and help to evaluate you and see if you should be tested.
There should be enough tests for people if they want them now?
Yes. Okay. Yes, we're in a good place with testing.
Okay. Well, this week we heard from John from Brainerd, and he wanted to know about the virus overall in the state of Minnesota. Are we ahead of the curve? Are we behind? What grade would you give to our state?
I would say that in the last 10 days, I would give us a good grade, that we have, our case numbers have slowed down. We've seen fewer hospitalizations. But with the reopening, we are starting. So the reopening was on, there were two reopenings. One was June 1st and one was June 10th. And with the reopening on June 10th now, we're starting to see the impact of that in an increase in cases. So unless we maintain attention to social distancing and mask wearing, our grade could go down. So I'd probably give us, you know, we'd probably be a B before, and if we're not careful, we'll be moving into the C minus range.
Well, you know, kind of along those lines, we had a question about masks, whether the Minnesota Department of Health or the state of Minnesota has considered a mask requirement for public spaces. They said that, you know, there would probably be lots of noncompliance, but it might get more people to wear masks in public.
The department is working. There's a large team. So the governor has pulled together a very large team that are working on what recommendations should be part of the kind of opening up plans. And certainly the department is participating in those conversations and is providing some of the scientific data then that would help inform those conversations. So yes, there's definitely conversations about the role that masks could play in reducing transmission in Minnesota and what level, you know, of statement should be made. I mean, we're clearly recommending them strongly. And do we need to have a requirement? That is something that is being evaluated.
Okay. Well, we heard from someone this week, too, about, it's kind of a mental health question that I think a lot of us are going through. Chris, you probably are personally, too. She said she's really worried about getting the disease, but more so about giving it to someone else. And she said, for that reason, when she does get out to grocery stores, wears a mask, but she is constantly replaying, like, all the things that she touched in that store, the people she might have gotten too close to that maybe weren't wearing masks. Is this normal?
Well, I think that kind of being concerned about COVID is very normal, and it's very kind of this person to worry about what role they might have if they're wearing a mask and someone else isn't. You know, that's very kind. I think what you want to keep in mind is that with COVID, the type of exposure that's going to be the most likely to result in transmission if someone would be in that asymptomatic, you know, phase and be infectious would be a prolonged contact. So we look at closer than 6 feet for 15 minutes or more. So if you're just passing someone in the grocery store and you happen to, you know, get closer than you would have wanted to, that quick encounter should not be a problem. And then the other thing is, although we're recommending disinfecting surfaces and we want people to be cognizant of not touching things and then touching their eyes and nose, that is not the primary mode of transmission. So for this person, the sheer fact that you care so much about the other people around you, you get gold stars for that, and you can feel a level of reassurance that if you are wearing a mask for source control, that brief crossing in the store where you were unable to, you know, maintain 6 feet, that should not be a problem because we're looking at a longer type of exposure.
Do you worry about this kind of stuff for yourself, or are you just too busy right now?
Yeah, I would say I'm pretty busy, but I am very. I mean, nobody wants to be the cause of someone else's illness, so I think we're all trying to be attentive to that. But certainly, I am rather busy these days, so I haven't had a lot of time to think philosophically.
Right, or overthink it. It's really tough to not do that to yourself right now. But we're talking with Chris Erisman from the Minnesota Department of Health. This is a conversation about Minnesota's response to COVID-19. We had a couple specific questions. Anna Minneapolis wanted to know about swimming pools. They're now open. Does the chlorine in a pool kill the virus?
Well, CDC tells us that they have no evidence that the virus can be spread to people via pools or hot tubs. So as you're thinking about the hot weather and thinking about pools, the more important thing is to make sure that while you're enjoying a pool, that you're maintaining distance from other people. But there's not evidence that the virus can be spread via the pool or the hot tub.
Along similar lines, we had a listener question about kids playing sports. She didn't see how kids playing baseball or softball could keep up with that social distancing. What are your thoughts on kids' activities this summer?
Well, you know, we have put together guidance for sports and for social distancing in sports. And so we've asked, you know, youth organizations that do coordinate sporting activities to think about a plan. So how would they engage in their sport, you know, and do so in a safe manner? And so when kids are like on the bench, so using baseball as an example, if kids are on the bench, you know, we want them to be spread apart. We recognize that it might not be possible for them to be competing with masks on, but we want the coaches and others to be wearing masks. And then baseball actually is probably one of the better sports because, and I always joke that if I was playing, it would never be a problem because I would never get on base, and so I would never have to be too close to anyone. But in general, you have less close contact with baseball than you do for some other sports. But we have put together guidance, and then we also refer youth sports organizations to the national guidance that's available. So there are ways to, you know, be thinking about being protective and engaging in sports because we recognize that that's really, really important for kids and adults. And so we have put together some guidance for that.
Some of our questions that came in this week have to do with the virus itself. There were some reports coming out of Johns Hopkins this week that coronavirus is more common and less deadly than originally thought. It sounds kind of like good news, but is it? And does that change anything about how health officials want people to deal with this threat?
I had seen some of that as well. I think that from the perspective of us in public health, it's always encouraging to see, you know, one report here, one report there that has some good news. But we want to make sure that we have lots of evidence and lots of data before we change guidance or change our recommendations. So I heard that. I thought, if that turns out to be true, that will be great. But I think it's a little bit early to be making that determination. I also always want to remind people that if you think back, today is June 26th, and if you think back on January 26th, so really not even 6 months ago, I mean, this was absolutely new. We knew very little about this virus. And so it's been a really steep learning curve, but also keep in mind that we have had not a lot of time to understand how this virus is acting. Very different from some of the other diseases, viral diseases that we deal with, like influenza, where we have literally hundreds of years of experience. So that's why when we hear good news like that, I am encouraged, because I'd much rather hear that kind of news than that the virus has mutated and it's even more deadly. You know, that we certainly want good news, but I also want to put it in context that we want to make sure that we, you know, that we have lots of data and lots of evidence of that before we change things.
Another listener sent us a question that had to do with antibodies, wanted kind of a understanding of how these antibodies are helping you having the Department of Health understand the virus a little bit more. But also, they saw that the Red Cross will, if you donate blood, they will give you a serology test to see if you have had coronavirus. This seems like a good idea. They wanted to know if they should do that.
Well, a couple of things. First of all, you know, we definitely know that there is a shortage of blood, so that there is a need for blood. Excuse me, my phone's ringing. There is a need for blood donation at this point, so we really want to, you know, encourage people to donate blood. We know that the blood centers are, you know, have taken a lot of steps to, you know, make sure it's safe to donate, all of those things. But I would want the individual to donate blood because that is their motivation, not as a motivation to get tested. We want people to, you know, if you have any concerns about COVID, you should be seeing your healthcare provider rather than going to a blood bank. The blood bank will be screening you. They will be checking all of those things. But, that would probably not be the way to get a serology test.
Okay.
But I do want to reinforce that there is a need for blood, and so that if you're someone who can donate blood, that would be great.
Can you kind of explain what that even means? What are the antibodies? What can you find out from the blood? And are there lots of tests going on right now?
There is some antibody testing. The challenge with antibody testing is that right now the testing that will tell you if you have COVID-19, that is the one that you hear about the most, is the swabbing that's done. So it's a nasal swab, it's a molecular test, and it tells you have, you're infected with COVID or you're not infected with COVID. Antibody tests, there are some that can do that, but in general, a lot of the serology tests are looking back. So they're looking at your antibodies to see, did you ever have an infection with COVID in the past? And so the reason that there are some challenges with that is that, first of all, we don't know how much antibody is necessary to provide protection. So I might get an antibody test, and it might say, Chris, yeah, you have evidence of antibodies. You probably had COVID. But what I don't know about that is, do I have any protection going forward? So we're not at that point where we can say, if you have an antibody level of X, you have protection. And the other thing that we don't know at this point is, say I did meet that magic X, how long will that last and how long will I have protection? So that's why, you know, when people ask us, we really go into this laundry list of kind of caveats about serologic testing, not because it doesn't have a place and not because it won't be informative, but rather that there are some gaps in what it can tell us and at this point in how we interpret it. And so we want to just be cautious so people aren't thinking of it as, you know, it's going to answer some serious question for you going forward, because there's still a lot of questions that we have about what it means.
And do we know yet if you have had it, so if it showed up in your serology test, that you won't get it again?
Well, that's something that is currently being evaluated.
Okay.
Our expectation is that, yeah, once you've had it, we think that you shouldn't have it again, because that is how so many other viral illnesses work. But that is being evaluated at this point. So the hope is that, yes, if you've had the illness, your body developed antibodies, and they should protect you going forward. But we still need to learn a little bit more about that before we can say with confidence. With measles, it's been around for hundreds of years, we know a lot about that disease, and we can tell you, you know, if you've had measles, you aren't going to get it again. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, we heard from someone this week about kind of sources of information. She participates in a lot of groups online, and she's seeing a ton of conspiracy theories. I'm sure you're seeing them too. She's seen a lot of people posting that if there is a vaccine for COVID-19, that is a government plot to control them, and that they would never get that vaccine. So at the Minnesota Department of Health, are you keeping up on this? How do you address this one in particular? But also give us some kind of guidelines for spotting this kind of misinformation, I guess.
Well, you know, one thing that's really important is that we want to make sure that people are going to trusted sources for their information. And usually, you know, the Centers for Disease Control is a source we recommend. Obviously, we recommend our own Minnesota Department of Health website. You want to make sure that you're getting information from, you know, from trusted sources. And I realize that there are a lot of conspiracy theories and a lot of stories about, you know, people kind of being in the pocket, you know, of, say, pharmaceutical companies when vaccines are being discussed or different things. And I can assure you that that is not the case. It's, at least for me, there are no kickbacks in my job. We are working. We are, you know, we are providing you with the best information that we have, but there are no conspiracies. There is no motivation for us to have a crisis like this. Our response is because it does exist in reality, but there's no benefit to anyone for creating a scenario that doesn't exist. So what we're seeing and what we're sharing with you, it's the real number of cases that we're getting, it's the deaths that we're getting, and we don't have any motivation other than making sure that the public can be as healthy as possible. So we're very aware of the conspiracy theories, and we really, if there's a factual piece that we can share that helps to counter that, we will do so. But I also want people to know that, you know, I've got staff who have been working, we now often will get a day off, but I mean, I had staff that were working 7 days a week for weeks on end to serve the public. And you don't do that if you have an ulterior motive. And so I think that it's important for the public to realize that.
Yeah, and I think we say it quite often on our weekly conversations here, but there's some scams that are out there. You're not going to get a text from someone. If you get a text that says that someone you know has COVID and you might have it, the Minnesota Department of Health is going to call you. Is that right?
Right. We will call, and once we have contacted you via phone the first time, yes, we may, after we've made contact, we may text you for a future communication, but your first communication from us will not be a text. And we will also never ask you for, you know, any kind of financial information, any of those kinds of things.
And you're probably not going to advertise a cure over text, is that right?
No, if we have good news about this illness, a vaccine or anything else, it would be in a public media manner.
Yeah. Well, we had a question about to you specifically. They asked, as a public health professional, did you ever expect to be living through a pandemic like this? And they want to know, what is your biggest piece of learning you've had so far?
Well, you know, I've spent a big chunk of my career planning for a pandemic, whether it's influenza or otherwise. And I can tell you that although we've had, you know, major outbreaks that I've dealt with and led, this is bigger and worse than anything, I guess, that we imagined. So even with the planning that we've had done, you know, this is has exceeded our expectations in that regard. So I can't say that I ever wanted to live through a pandemic. even as an epidemiologist, I don't think that the interest in the science is such that we'd ever wish for a pandemic, but it's definitely been a learning experience. And I guess if we had to have one, I have spent a lot of time preparing for one, and so perhaps it's good to still be able to be here and contribute. But I never dreamed that this is how it would be.
Yeah, and you may not even have an answer for this, but they had asked about this biggest piece of learning. I suspect you're learning something new every day, but been surprised by anything in this process so far?
I think it is fair to say we're learning something new every day. And I think that as we respond, our response gets better because of even the things that we learned in March. So it is kind of a continuous improvement process. But I think the biggest learning is just that all the planning in the world, all the anticipating, all the assumptions are never exactly like the real thing. And so because of that, we're continuously growing and evolving in terms of our response. And we appreciate that the public recognizes that this is learning for all of us. And as we learn things about our response and learn new things about the virus, we adapt. And we appreciate that the public recognizes that that's how it has to be when you have a novel virus.
We had a question about combating racial disparities in healthcare generally, but COVID-19 specifically. And I see that the lieutenant governor has posted today on Facebook about a free testing this weekend for the Native American community in St. Paul area, where you don't have to have symptoms or insurance or ID. Are there more things like that planned that make it more easy to get testing and kind of deal with some of the barriers there?
Yes, that's something that we recognize within the agency is a real challenge that we need to address. Even when we offered community testing following the mass gatherings from the George Floyd killing, you know, we offered the testing, and what we saw was that while we did have individuals from communities of color get tested, it wasn't as effective in reaching those communities. So we have a team that's working on community testing and how can we better access and provide services to those communities. So what the lieutenant governor was describing today is one of those attempts.
And so the numbers that some worried about because of the big gatherings after the killing of George Floyd, we haven't seen those show up yet. Does that mean do you think they won't show up? I guess you can't necessarily know that yet, but what is the Minnesota Department of Health thinking will happen?
Well, we've been encouraged to this point that the testing that we did offer, so there were 3 weeks of community testing at 4 locations, you know, on Tuesdays and Wednesdays of those weeks. We tested thousands of people, and we saw a really low positivity rate. And this testing was made available and intended for individuals who didn't necessarily have symptoms, but who had participated in some of the mass gatherings. So that was really encouraging to us, and we're also interested in hearing, you know, many other states and communities had the same mass gatherings, and we're interested in hearing about what kind of positivity rate they found. But no, we were very, very encouraged by that because we were concerned that that could be a potential for a lot of transmission.
That is Chris Ayersman. She's the director of the Infectious Disease Epidemiology Prevention and Control Division at the Minnesota Department of Health. Chris, thank you so much for your time and for clarification on COVID-19 today.
Oh, happy to be with you. Thank you.
You're welcome. This broadcast is a collaboration of community radio stations throughout the state in partnership with Amper's Diverse Radio for Minnesota communities and the Minnesota Broadcasters Association. You can listen to the full conversation and past conversations at our website, kaxe.org, or send in your own question. Call 612-562-9895 or email covid@ampers.org. I'm Heidi Holton for KAXE KBXE. Thanks for listening.